Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon a storm of spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. You do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up. Please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left once we abandon the lie?
Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I still have not read any books in George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I've read every book in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I have also read all the books in George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series.
Excellent. Good job, everybody. You are listening to this on the Fighting in the War Room feed. Once again, you could subscribe to that at fightinginthewarroom.com/subscribe. Follow. There's another show on that you're probably getting. And I apologize if you listened to Tuesday's episode where David Ehrlich got very mad at book readers, show watchers. We're back in the safe space of Storm of Spoilers. Safe for you book readers, not so much safe if you don't like spoilers. Hopefully next season I won't have to disclaim with that, because it seems like in terms of your guys' feedback, especially with predicting sort of how they were going to handle Shay and correcting us directly after last week's episode about what was going to happen in the Vale, you guys are all smart people, so we're here to talk about Game of Thrones season 4 finale, The Children, which took, I think, 66 minutes in runtime in the end.
Sounds right.
Awesome. And crammed a whole bunch of stuff in there. I'm not even quite sure where to begin, so I guess we'll start with Joanna. If you want to do overall thoughts, you can, or you could just pick, like, your favorite moment you didn't expect to like.
Oh, my favorite moment I didn't expect to like. I guess the Stannis moment landed. I thought it was just going to blow, but it still was very exciting to me. I still think it should have been at the end of last week's episode, but I thought it went really well. So that's the one that I wasn't expecting to like that went well, but it certainly wasn't my favorite. But...
Neil, do you have a opposing surprised favorite scene?
It doesn't have to be your favorite. Opposing? I don't know. I kind of agree. I liked the way I'm still a little confused as to why they couldn't have just made last week's episode a little bit longer and finished up the Stannis stuff in that. But I thought that whole sequence really worked. There was some good character stuff with Mance and Jon, and then Stannis shows up and it's awesome. I love that bird's eye shot to kind of open things up. If I had to pick a different one,
Was it Cersei and Jaime doing it in the white in the
no, that was one. So here's what's interesting about this episode for me is that when I first watched it, I was like, this is an excellent episode. They accomplished a lot. Everybody, I think all the stuff kind of landed. And then as I really started to kind of peel it back and put my book reader hat back on, I was just overwhelmingly pissed off. Because there are so many little things that got wrong. I will say the biggest change, obviously, is the Brienne and the Hound fight, which was awesome. From a sheer cinematography, choreographing, brutality standpoint, that is a fight that I feel like is just really cool fan fiction that somehow made it into the show. Like if you were like, hey, let's rank all the most badass characters in Game of Thrones and have them fight over the course of 3 weeks, you'd have the Mountain and the Viper and then Brienne and the Hound, you know? So I think it really is, to me, it's the triumvirate of three great duels that we've seen. Jamie and Ned being the first one, and then the two that happened this season. So I thought that was a really good twist. I'm sad that it was the sealing of the fate of the biggest disappointment that everyone seemed to have over the episode in Lady Stoneheart not showing up. But I'm happy that it was there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely enjoyed that. My answer would be I did not expect for Bran to get an action beat and for me to enjoy it, considering what I knew had to come. And like, I don't know,
skeletons, man?
I mean, the first time it was happening, I was more just like, what is happening? But the second time I watched it, I actually did like it. It's crazy. I kept thinking about when True Blood did their fairy hand grenades, beginning of season 4, and how out of place it felt in that series because they sort of like started a season with it. But here, like closing a season with it and then sort of sticking it towards the first third of the episode, I didn't mind it. The sad thing about that is it sort of shunts Jojen's death like way back in everybody's mind because it's like you barely remember it by the time the episode's over. But the good part about it is that we got some stuff that could have been really boring, and I got a skeleton fight, which works for me. Although it's really fantasy, but this finale seemed to be a grand conclusion of everything we assumed Game of Thrones was before kicking us off sort of into the future. I mean, I guess that's getting way ahead of myself, but it seems I read a think piece on the AV Club by Todd Vanderwoof talking about how this season was a mixtape of like greatest hits from the second half of the book. And because of that, because of how spread out the characters are over this world, there had to be great economy in scenes with, like, say, Bran, because you're going to get, like, three scenes you're going to remember in the season with Bran, so they all have to be, you know, like, at Craster's Keep, or almost seeing Jon, or fighting skeletons. And we don't have a lot of, like, sort of meandering genealogy talk we had in the first season, which I enjoyed, but it's sort of like climax television in a weird way that from a show that I would have classified as a history up until this season.
You know what I think is interesting about that? And probably one of the almost problematic things about the way they've executed that, that scene with the Children of the Forest at the end kind of reminded me of why it's probably best that they're saving some stuff for season 5 to breathe. Because it's interesting that they kind of just like showed up and introduced this new magic in this little 5-minute span.
Yeah.
And so right after the episode, when I saw, you know, Twitter kind of blowing up with people very disappointed about the Lady Stoneheart thing, my first thought was, well, it's probably good that they didn't just go throwing in more. You know, they set up like the mountain thing, which I have a whole long thing about that we'll get to. But I got some problems. But it's probably good that they're not just tossing it all in at the end, all of this new kind of supernatural stuff. Because I think the Children of the Forest, that was slightly problematic, but cool. I guess there's not that much more lead up that they could have done, because otherwise Bran would have been taking over most of the season, and he was super boring until that moment. So, right.
I mean, it's a kind of magic they haven't really foreshadowed as much recently. Like, I don't know if we've ever heard about the children before, or knowing that sort of magic.
Seems like zero talk about
right.
them.
So it's like, usually, you know, we're building up to dragons, or we're building up to White Walker reveal, you know, doing one scene a season for a while. But this one was just sort of like, and now you're in skeleton Krakoja land with these little fairy children.
With boomstick bombs.
Right. And it's like, and then we're going to end on this really ambiguous, it could mean anything, here's what Bran's next season's going to be, and then right back to more grounded reality for the rest of the episode.
No, but I think you're completely right that they needed to jump Bran's story, because it's not just that it was boring in the books, which I think it kind of is, but it's like even the interesting stuff from the books does not translate well to the screen. So I think Weiss and Benioff just really needed to fast forward, do what they did exactly, which is fast forward to the end of Bran's storyline in the book, which is basically what they did. There's a little bit more to come, but not much. And then do their own shit with it. That's more interesting and dynamic and full of stuff like skeleton fights than what we've seen from him so far. I didn't love the skeleton fights. I really didn't like the way that Jojen died, but I did like the Children of the Forest. I thought that was well done. I don't think it needed background. You're way, way north of the wall. I feel like everyone understands that all bets are off way, way north of the wall, you know?
Do they? I mean, I guess that only this season have they started planting that idea. With
yeah,
the
we saw
Knights
that fortress.
King.
Yeah, we saw the Fortress of Solitude up there already. So I think, I don't know.
But I mean, the same thing that why Mance Rayder's, like, although well acted, you know, sort of stance isn't as obvious as it could be is because I don't know if they've dealt with what is actually north of the wall so well. I think they sort of fumbled that ball in season two with the logistics of shooting where they did and being out in the cold and whatnot and like sort of not making the fist happen in like a snowstorm and mostly off camera, I think made North of the Wall feel kind of small. And they're working towards making it feel big again, but we're still geographically in a place where John can hike back and forth to Craster's Keep real fast. So I don't know how well that's working.
That is interesting because there are a lot of people, I think show watchers, who are wondering why that army of White Walkers has not made it to the wall yet. And it's like, yeah, they were just like right there, right? But what they never really kind of placed that the Fist of the First Men is very far away from the wall.
Well, didn't they like show it? Couldn't you see the wall from where they were? I think that's the really
they might have.
Part.
It was super confusing. It's like, well, they're right there. Why has it now been two more seasons and they have not attacked the wall yet?
Yeah.
So
I agree with that. Sorry.
I mean, it's the same sort of toying with place that the TV show did to, you know, just sort of not talk about why the Hound and Arya left the Vale. It sort of seems like that would be a weird...
It made me so mad.
It's like, oh, they just left. Arya just laughed, and they laughed, and they turned around, and she laughed all the way out of that valley.
They laughed. The guard gave them some lemon cakes and said, be on your way, and they went on their merry way. I mean, what? What writing is that?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Although I do, speaking of geography, I now have a new Lady Stoneheart theory.
I think, all right, go for it. I think I know where you're going.
You're keeping love alive?
Yes. Well, okay. For two reasons. One, because they've already started to introduce the kind of Frankenstein's monster line of the mountain, which, again, I've got some problems with that, and we'll get to that in a minute. but, so they've already introduced that, which I think is a companion to the Lady Stoneheart resurrection thing. They've already introduced Beric Dondarrion, which I still don't understand why he would be in the show at all, and they would make a whole big deal out of him being able to come back from the dead if they weren't going to eventually do Lady Stoneheart. Anyway. But from a geographic standpoint, in season five, if you think about like where Brienne is at, what will happen with Brienne and Pod, they don't know where Sansa is. They left the Vale, or maybe but now that she's met Arya, the idea might be to chase Arya down and, you know, logically, where's Arya going to go in Brienne's mind? To River Run, where the only remaining family is. So maybe we see Brienne and Pod go, find out that Lysa is dead. Sansa's obviously not going to be there at that point. And they go, all right, well, let's go to River Run. And they go through the Riverlands and they meet Lady Stoneheart. We get more Brienne and Pod. So
it could be.
It's my theory.
I like your theory. I'm afraid to hope at this point, though, because that'll be like the third season in a row where I'm going to be like, all right, Lady Stoneheart's coming. It's coming because I thought we were going to have it at the end of last season. So I'm afraid
well, what
to
it
hope.
Does,
but...
What it does give them a chance to do is it does give them a chance to do what the books did, which was start to talk about this mysterious figure, maybe have Bran have one of his tree experiences where he sees a hooded figure and the Brotherhood that replaces kind of what happened with Arya's wolf dreams, you know, because none of the other Stark kids are having wolf dreams. So I think that's out. So I think it gives them time to kind of build that the mystery around this character, and then the reveal is even better. Because I feel like just the reveal is more of a confusing, like, wait, what? Why is she there? Why are they following her? Why is she a judge? Why is she judging people? And why does she look like Catelyn Stark? You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it could be. I mean, I really do think that it would have been fine in this episode, but I think you're right. It could be even stronger next year, but I'm just so afraid that we didn't get any cold hands and they're just like, nope, we're not going to go there. Reanimated skeletons, sure. Catelyn Stark, no. And all the like explanations from the show people as to why she isn't there just makes me feel more and more like they just don't want to do it, which is fine. It's their property. It's their prerogative. I just think there's no better place it would have worked for all the reasons we talked about on this show over and over again, in that thematic sense with the children in this episode. So,
well, do you think we need to know more about the religion and we're going to take a hard turn in that with the King's Landing?
See, that's Dave's dream, that it's going to become about religion and trade, right?
See, okay, here's what it
has to eventually.
I hope so. This occurred to me on why the Tyrion scene at the end sort of bothered me directly from the beginning. Is without the story of his first prostitute wife, and you know where do whores go and all that, it sort of unmoors that event from the history of the character. And what I like about the way that this show was adapting itself up until very recently was it was sort of allowing these novelistic characters to roll out over the page and sort of didn't really stop to care if you, you know, like remembered something from way back when, because they, I don't know, it's a modern TV show and it's the most watched TV show right now. So chances are somebody's going to remember and fill you in. Like I explained the Jack and Hagar scene to people like word for word several times after this episode, just to, you know, sort of replant it in their mind. But now that it's like these sort of these climaxes and these deaths, I've become unmoored from the grand history of Westeros. And now it's just like skeleton fights and characters I want to see biting each other's ears off, which is fine. It's just much less grand in terms of adaptation than what I was hoping for.
No, I agree with you. It's especially the back half of this season. But the same is true of the book. If you're going to cover all of the deaths and all of the fights that are in the books, sure, they added some stuff. But, like, it's going to be a lot of shock and awe in a row. But I agree with you that they're getting away from some of the better character stuff that makes the show even stronger. I don't care at all what's happening in Dany's plot this week. Like, I didn't care. That did not touch me at all. And I couldn't tell you exactly why, but it's funny.
So
I was
talking. Keep shoehorning her into middle of better episodes.
Yeah, I guess
like
so.
All of her stuff seems to be getting buried. All of her good stuff.
But I was talking to your podcasting cohort Katie Rich about this today, Dave. And I laid out in an article on Vanity Fair like how the Tyrion stuff goes in the books and how they just really shied away and whitewashed it in the show to a certain extent in order to keep Tyrion more sympathetic. And Katie said that she wouldn't like the show if it had been as dark as it was in the book. She's like, I wouldn't like it if Tyrion and Jaime like parted ways by fighting angrily and all this stuff. And I mean, maybe that's true. I don't know. Maybe that's true for a lot of people. But I like to think that, like, all the people who read the books and were like, yeah, this shit just got dark. This is interesting. I like to think that they would respond to that on screen as well. I don't know.
Well, it seems like they didn't have time for it. Like, it was weird to me when it happened, when all of a sudden we cut to Jaime opening a door being like, get out of your cell. And I'm like, we just spent, like, 5 weeks talking in that cell. Couldn't you ease us out of it a little bit better? And then he like is about to go to the Varys door and stops and turns around. And it's like, oh, if you don't know that, you know, he's in the Tower of the Hand, then it's, you're gonna spend the first half of that scene looking at the Lion Crest and being like, where is he now? Whose bed is Shay's in? It just seemed like it got fumbled somewhere for me that made it less grand, and therefore I don't know. It's not that I didn't care it would happen, but it's like there was so much emphasis put on Tywin afterwards that like the Shay death now almost doesn't exist in my mind, which retroactively like erases the character from the show in my mind.
Yeah.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
Do you think that it has something to do, because in the books, that's a really interesting moment between the two brothers, and Tyrion kind of has to look at Jaime differently right at the end there. And I feel like it's part of them trying to balance out this crazy character assassination they're doing with Jaime Lannister. Like, they seem to, all the way up to the point where he returned to King's Landing, know exactly what kind of arc that character had. Like, they had him. It was perfect. And then since then, it's just gone off the map. Because it really is a moment where, like, Tyrion kind of sees his brother and realizes that even though he told him the truth, he kind of looks at him differently. And he kind of feels on his own. He starts feeling betrayed. And it's really the catalyst for him going up there. So, but I wonder if that's because there. I had a huge problem with the other Jaime Cersei scene, because that's such a huge moment in the book for Jaime. That's like the breaking point between those two, and the reason why Jaime eventually leaves King's Landing is that he like rejects Cersei, and she just goes off about his honor and his manhood, and it's basically the end for those two characters. So now I'm completely confused as to what I'm supposed to think about this character, because I have this character in the books who redeems himself so well, and then I have this show character that has kind of teetered back and forth.
Was the motivation for Cersei going off on Tywin and sort of... Was it Tyrion escape? No, because Tywin's still alive. What made her suddenly crack? Did I miss something?
I don't know.
She didn't want to marry Loras.
Well, yeah, but maybe she felt like she was on a winning streak because she's like, all right, Tyrion's going to die. That's what I've been angling for a really long time. Time to assert my power. I don't know.
It was like shoved close up with the mountain scene in the sense that was the last time we saw Cersei. So I was like, did that distress her somehow? Am I supposed to feel her distressing power about, I don't know, what Dorne's going to think when they get here? I have no idea.
That maybe, because my theory, the rumor that I've heard, we're allowed to spoil in terms of like
everything.
Everything. All right, cool.
All spoilers.
All spoilers. So there's a pretty solid rumor that Jaime's going to be in Dorne next season. That they've changed the story so that Jaime is going to be going to Dorne for whatever reason. It's very smart storytelling because it puts in a very established known character in this new place that show watchers are going to have a hard time getting a grip on. He's probably going to take Bronn with him if we know the show and how they like to pair people together. So if Bronn and Jaime go to Dorne, ostensibly to rescue Marcella, then it makes sense that he's there at the behest of Cersei, that Cersei sends him there to get Marcella. So if that's what they're setting up, if that's why Jaime and Cersei need to still be together so that Cersei can coerce him into getting Marcella back for her, that makes sense to me. That's the only reason why it would work, I think.
But his honor is the victim there, I think.
Throwing the book on the floor was a big problem for me.
His honor is gone. He gets his honor back in the books. I'm so sad.
Yeah, it's bad. Oh, no, I'm not defending it. I'm just trying to figure it out. Because like
that does make sense, though.
Because
he takes
the
place of
Ser
Aerys.
Yeah, and if that's not the case, then they just wanted to have them boning, and I respect them too much as storytellers to believe that. So,
ooh, and does Jaime fall in love with what's her name as well, the Martell
princess?
Could
be. That'd be fun.
Ooh, saucy, I like it.
Yeah. So.
So is the biggest folly of this season ultimately the failed intercourse between the siblings earlier on and how it was portrayed?
I think
so
in
far.
General it's the character assassination of Jaime Lannister, like the unfortunate, almost deliberate character assassination by the show of a character who fought so hard to get his honor back and is doing so much good. Like, he really, you know, in the books and on the show, for the most part, he really feels like that character who you really hate in moment one, but there's so much of what you like about him that is earned throughout the rest of the series. And I think it's unfortunate that they can't let that keep going. They have to just shit all over it.
Well, I really like how it goes in the books and how it could have gone in the show, which is that Jaime has a classic hero redemptive arc. Then he comes back. He has ill-advised sex, possibly rape with Cersei in the Sept. And then that's the breaking point. If he like he relapses and then he's like, no, I liked it better when I was an honorable dude, and then goes back on the upswing, which he kind of was because he was hanging out with Tyrion. He sent Brianna on her quest. You know, like he recouped some of his losses there. But then this is just another relapse that doesn't make sense if you want the arc that you have in the book, which we all do, or those of us who know what it is do.
That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate.
I just, it's weird to see a TV show do something that's big of a misstep, and then that's the only misstep for like the rest of the season. Like, I mean, I can't think of anything that large. I can't think of anything else that was mistranslated or treated ambiguously.
No, and the other changes that they made are ones that I really liked, like the Sansa stuff I really like, fast forwarding Bran's plot I really liked.
The intersection of Brienne and the Hound was
great.
Really cool.
So good. And not just Brienne and the Hound, but Brienne and Arya, which I loved so much because it really felt like you're showing Arya a path that she could take. She could become Brienne in a different life. She would have become Brienne, and she's not going to. So
I think accelerating the Theon story is actually not a bad choice, even though it's uncomfortable and I don't think a lot of people like watching it. It would have been really weird to have that happen much later.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. But P.S. not having Lady Stoneheart, problem.
I still have hope. I'm not going to, I don't want to give people hope. I'm just going to hold it in a small piece of my heart. But I do think that if they bring her in next season, there will be a logic to it. And it will redeem some of the things that I had problems with in this finale. It'll make it feel right that oh yeah, they just wanted to let that storyline breathe a little bit, and they wanted to kind of introduce the talk of her, kind of the legend of her first to give people an understanding. Because I do feel like the show, a lot of the times where it's held the hand of the audience, that's been on purpose and for good reason. But hopefully it works out. There is one thing I had a huge problem with, though.
The mountain?
Was it the mountain? Could it have possibly been the mountain?
Are we going to get to that in just a minute?
Yeah, unless we have more to say on what we were
talking about.
No, the
minute has come.
Let's do it.
All right, so here's my problem with the mountain. Bringing the mountain in, I do like that they went back to... because. You know, my roommate and I we're big Oberyn Martell fans, if you can't tell. And we have had long form discussions about how that's going to play out, how the aftermath, because in the books, I wasn't really completely sold on how badass Oberyn was until you find out what happened to the mountain afterwards. Until you find out that it's kind of this situation where Oberyn, he kind of had an idea that he might not leave King's Landing alive. Like, he was on that kind of mission. And he wanted to be sure that the mountain was going to suffer for his crimes, because he was sure that he was the bad guy. So there are all these great moments in the fourth book in Dorne where they talk about how the mountain suffered for weeks and months, and how his screaming could be heard throughout the Red Keep, and how eventually Cersei had to get Qyburn to move him down into the black cells or the deeper dungeons so that people couldn't hear him suffering. And they just skipped right over all that.
It would have been so easy too, just to hear him screaming.
And I think that it's
in
weird
an establishing shot, you know?
Yeah. That's what ultimately brings her down. It's Tywin that wants to keep him alive because they eventually want to behead him and send his head to Dorne to prove that both Elia and Oberyn's murderer is dead. And that's a big thing for Dorne and the Sand Snakes. And it's like this huge storyline for the Dorne characters is, you know, Dorne essentially locks up all of Oberyn's daughters because they're going to go get revenge, and that skull showing up is kind of the balm that soothes Dorne. So I'm curious as to how they're going to play that. Either way, it really shorts the greatness of a character that dies really horribly, and I think people were really sad about that. But I think it's almost soothing to know that the mountain really got it in the end. And in the show, you just get this like 3-minute scene where he's lying there still, you know, he's obviously wounded, and they mention Venom, and they're like, oh, those silly Martells and their Venom. They really don't sell it. And I was very disappointed in that, because it's really one of the things that drives home how great that character is that he really was playing the long game, and he wasn't going to lose no matter what. So
they spend more time on that establishing shot of like his pus and fluids going into a beaker than they did anything else. And they really, it could have been, I think that was the first scene at King's Landing, but I feel like if you could have had another scene and he's just screaming in the background, that would have been great. Maybe it would have played too comedically. I don't know, but I don't know.
I'm really sad, because it does feel like the show, it's one of those things, it's similar to, and I know this is weird for me to say, that it's similar to the show just reading things completely wrong, like the Cersei-Jaime sex scene on Joffrey's deathbed. Like, they just didn't get the point of what that whole sequence is supposed to be. You know, it's not about Qyburn taking over and creating Frankenstein's monster. It's about showing that the mountain is suffering and that Oberyn really kind of won in the end. And, you know, they really just skip over, and they seem more concerned with setting up what happens next year and the Sir Robert Strong, you know, Frankenstein soldier that's there to carry Cersei off after she has her trial. It's, I don't know. It just feels like, I just watch it and I'm like, well, they didn't get it. These guys who made this really great show. They clearly don't get it, and I do. And I'm sad now.
I think that's a good question ultimately about this season, is as we're moving out of book territory, because we're catching up. We talked about it a little bit last week, but do you guys trust this show to use these characters well as they get off into their own space?
Some more than others, I think. Like I said, I like what they did with Sansa, and I thought the Brienne and Arya stuff really helped enrich that moment for me with Arya a lot. So I think in some cases they do know what they're doing. But in other cases, if they're just trying to, as you say, cram more shocks in there, or if, like what Neil says about the mountain, if the emphasis is more on the gruesome shock and awe of a Frankenstein's monster than anything else, then, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Bran. Is it going to be crazy fairy grenades all the time? I don't know, you know, so.
Bran suddenly becomes the most exciting storyline.
Could be.
I feel like if you posed that question 2 weeks ago, right after the Mountain and the Viper, I would have said, yeah, I trust him. But I think after these last two episodes, I'm in a little bit more wait and see mode. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not fully confident until I see what happens in season 5, which is cool, because now I'm really going to want to see season 5. But yeah. I'm also, there's a little trepidation there about whether or not they can go off on their own. And I'm kind of hoping that there's some really great end game stuff, because, you know, I think a lot of book readers might have been a little down on the last two books. You know, first, the fourth book's kind of a tough read to get through. Yeah. But, you know, you really get to the end of those two books and you're just like, well, where are they going with this? You know, like, it just feels so incomplete. And
so empty,
you know,
too,
you worry
at
that
the
show's
going to
do that.
Yeah. It feels so stretched, and I'm really bummed that George R. R. Martin has so obviously, I mean, this sounds so terrible because he's created this brilliant, brilliant universe. So I don't mean to sound disrespectful, but it's obvious that, and he said as much, that he doesn't listen to editors anymore. Right. And so, you know, the fact that he's going to stretch this series possibly into 8 books is poppycock, when like nothing the books were so much better when they were denser. And now he just keeps stuffing it with more and more stuff. And he's good at the stuffing, but the meat was better. And that's what I would rather have. I would rather have a shorter, just fiercer series than the diluted stuff that we're getting now in the fourth and the fifth book. And I think that's what the show is going to be able to do to their advantage. They can just cherry pick what storylines they like. They can replace problematic characters with better ones. Like, it might be that we don't get Penny at all and we just get Varys instead, and that would be awesome. You know, like, they can make improvements, and that's great. As long as, you know, I guess that comes to the meat of Dave's question is, do we feel like they get it enough that all the changes they make are going to be for the good? And I don't think all the changes that they make are going to be for the good, but to watch Jaime and Bronn go off on the road together, that might be fun. To spend more time with Varys and Tyrion, that's going to be preferable to Varys disappearing. So I'm on board with that, you know?
So I guess, is it time to start reckoning with this show as no longer an adaptation, or is that what we think at the end of every season now?
I definitely think we should still do this podcast next year.
Oh, I mean, that's that's definitely still.
Oh, yeah, but it's very different. It's going to change the whole way in which I interact with the show. Like, tracking it is going to be even harder. It's already hard. I don't know if you guys saw that infographic. Someone did an infographic of, like, a meticulous breakdown of all the scenes in the show and what chapters they correlate to in the books. You know, so you've even got the one from Winds of Winter, because that was like a chapter that was released. And it's just going to get crazier. It's just going to get way more all over the map in terms of where they're going. It's crazy that when you tell people that Bran is basically at the end of his storyline, people are, their minds are blown by that. So
I'm more interested to see what the showrunners think their show is about once it stops being about adapting these books. Because, like, I don't know, like, we have this vague idea of what it takes to be a ruler, and then sort of, like, changing this sort of medieval generational houses thing through chaos. There's a lot of interesting themes. And as somebody that's looking forward to the religions and the banks, I'm hoping they could find a way to make the show be saying something overall as a show.
Because I feel like, I feel like I trust them more with the broad strokes than I do with the little character details that are the richness that they've been able to pull out of the books. So, but I think the overall thematic direction of the show, it feels right, and it feels like they get that. But it's weird. It's the micro stuff that I don't think they're getting right. And unless there's some really great payoff that we don't know about with some of these changes, I don't get it.
Yeah, and they're about to start production on season 5, so I at least have some idea what they're not giving away in interviews. But yeah, I don't know. It seems like a lot of stuff that they changed could have extreme ramifications, and I'd like to give them credit for having a lot planned out, but really, when you're moving a production this size through production, how much can you be thinking about, like, the way season 4 is going to affect season 6? It's got to be helpful to have a myopic view at some point, and I'm interested to see if they could keep that going once it's this huge multi-million-dollar conglomerate and they suddenly have to write the ending to their own stories.
I'd like to see, I hope at the end we get to see like a big wall that they had of everything sort of mapped out. That's fascinating to me. I would love to see what inside the writer's room Game of Thrones looks like.
Like the pictures of the lost writer's room.
Yeah,
it's just
exactly.
Like crazy, just note card covered wall.
I mean, I know a lot of people, I actually listened to the Nerdist Writers Panel, which is like one of my favorite podcasts. So I have like a deep love for TV writers' room for some reason. And I know a lot of people still use like physical stuff as opposed to like digital options. And that's what I hope we get to see someday, is some crazy bananas yarn wall of the Game of Thrones universe that they've mapped out. We'll see.
I think you're just going to have to make that.
I could do it.
Yarn walls are a visual trope that has seen a lot of play already this year in showing a character is crazy. You know how many people make yarn walls in Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Dubstep yarn walls?
Yeah, it's just like, oh, how do we show he's upset? Yarn wall.
Yarn wall. Well, don't you think that, you know, Rust Cole ups everyone by having like a yarn wall storage unit, like an entire storage unit is the yarn wall. So
definitely. Anyway. I'm waiting for Varys's yarn wall.
Yes. His spider web.
I'm just disappointed that Matthew McConaughey did not play the Blood Raven.
He was so, it was very Carcosa for sure. What was I going to say? Oh, with Varys, I mean, that's another beat that I didn't like. I really love that theory that Varys sort of pushed Tyrion to kill Tywin. And in that way, you have both Varys, you know, that's the implication in the book. And that way you have both Varys and Littlefinger as these dual, you know, operators behind the scene manipulating people.
Right. I mean, you don't think they could retcon that?
They could, but he wasn't even there. Like, he wasn't, like, you know, he's behind the door up a stairway, and then Tyrion completely of his own accord. So you needed to have Varys be like, oh, P.S., that's the hatch to Tower of the Hand,
well,
by the way.
No, that's normal con. I'm talking about retconning, where he's like, you know, later on a boat and being like, I'm very terribly sorry that I led you into the Tower of the Hand.
The audience blacked out at that moment, but it happened. Remember?
Yeah, totally.
And then they have a flashback.
I apologize, which means I did it.
Well, it does. And I think it now, if they do the whole Varys, like the finish of that storyline where he goes back and he apparently kills the other Kevin Lannister.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense at all now.
Right.
Like it doesn't show him as a master operator, which he totally is, you know, right there with Littlefinger. But I feel like that's a discussion for a whole nother what are they going to do next year show.
That's true. But he is on a boat, which makes him super important to our catchphrase of how everybody we love is on a boat.
Yeah. And I like Varys. He's cool.
Yeah. I think I said Varys very early on and somebody doubted me.
That was probably me. I said maybe Varys. Well, you said Jorah for sure. And Jorah's not on a boat. That we know.
Well, we don't know that he's on a boat, but he's probably going to be on a boat, right?
He's on an emotional boat.
Yeah, I was about to say he's on a boat of his soul.
He is certainly adrift.
Yeah, it's like a dinghy. Poor Jorah.
Neil led me into a plug, and I didn't even do it. We're going to do a wrap-up episode for the Storm of Spoilers before we leave you for another season, and we'd like you to contribute to this episode by telling us how you think the TV show is going to end. Using your book knowledge, using your show knowledge, using anything you want, casting. Maybe we're going to have flashbacks next season. But you could participate in this by going to fightinginthewarroom.com/kingsmoot. That is King S-moot, M-O-O-T. And entering the password on a boat, because we want to make sure that you've listened to this and not just some sort of crazy non-book reader troll person. So then we could all have a nice, constructive conversation. We'll be reading all your stuff, and we'll be talking about where next season's going to be and places you could find us. And I think I'm going to challenge each of my co-hosts to bring another adaptation they enjoy from one medium to another to sort of recommend on our off season.
That's my favorite thing. Okay.
Throwing down.
All right, I'm ready.
So check back at fightinginthewarroom.com/gotspoilers for when that's going to be. We'll schedule it out for you and participate at fightinginthewarroom.com/kingsmoot, password, on a boat, all one word, on a boat. And until next week, where can we find more of you online, Joanna Robinson?
You can find me most days on vanityfair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at JoeWroteThis.
Neil Miller.
You can find me writing 2,500 words a week about Game of Thrones, apparently, on filmschoolrejects.com and tweeting at rejects sometimes.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. I spell my first name DA7E. That's also my Twitter handle. I write about superhero movie news and Star Wars on latino-review.com. I said see you next week, but I just realized I also said we'd schedule it in the future. So now that you're thoroughly confused, we could wrap up season 4 of Game of Thrones. Our watch has ended. See you soon.